Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Here we go. Hour 2, George Karl. Great NBA coach, almost 30 years coaching in the NBA, is going to join us in a few minutes. Live in L.A., it's The Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1. Clippers lost. I still like them in the series. They are a hard team to get your arms around. They're not very good. The clutch data stats are bad late. You get inconsistent efforts. I mean, last night, Reggie Jackson's great. Paul George is wonderful, and Kawhi sort of disappears late. That's just the Clippers. Nothing's easy for them, so I still like them over Utah. But listen, if you lose to Utah, it's fine. Utah's really good. I think Denver's good, but they're missing Jamal Murray, Will Barton. They're not the same team. So eight teams left. None have won a title since 1983, and I think it's really fun. I want to touch on Russell Wilson. So, it's funny about Russell Wilson. He's 32 years old. And unlike Brady and LeBron weren't into this, this nutrition stuff at the beginning of their careers, because it wasn't really available as much in the country. Russell Wilson's 32 years old. He will play well into his 40s. So Russell Wilson has played 9 years in the NFL. He's not halfway there yet. In my opinion, Russell Wilson will play into his 40s. I think he's got 12 more years left. And I think his prime is still probably 5 to 6 more years. He takes meticulous care of his body. He's a very young 32 years old. Whereas Deshaun Watson not only has some legal issues, he's been hurt twice. Aaron Rodgers, 37, couple collarbone surgery. So I think Russell's going to play for a long time. But yesterday he was talking about, some of the issues with Seattle in the offseason. And I tend to believe, whether it's a corporate employee and corporate bosses, a husband and a wife, a player and a team, I think there needs to be a balance in the relationship. Otherwise, it creates resentment, and you don't want resentment. Aaron Rodgers now resents that he doesn't get enough say with the Packers. You find husbands and wives, there's a resentment if he or she controls the relationship. And so Russell Wilson pushed back in the offseason, and Seattle responded, meaning there's a reasonable balance between the front office and the quarterback. And yesterday, Russell doesn't want to leave Seattle. The grass can sometimes be greener. I don't believe there's a greener pasture for Russell Wilson than Seattle. I'll get to that in a second, but here's Russell yesterday.
You know, in terms of the trade talks, I think that anytime you play professional sports, there's always a possibility of something happen, right? And I think that's just the reality. I think that there's a lot of teams out there that people were saying that I was going to or would go to. I requested a trade. I did not request a trade. I've always wanted to play here. And the reality is, I think calls were getting thrown around and this and that, and I think that's just a reality. But I think at the end of the day, the real reality is that I'm here, and I'm here to win. I'm here to win it all.
And go back to the four teams that were interested in him in terms of grass is greener. Las Vegas. Well, they don't have a winning culture. Well, when's the last time they were great in back-to-back years? Chicago. They can never get the offense right, and from a weather standpoint, there's a reason they haven't had a lot of great quarterbacks. It's windy. It's cold. It's a northern division. That wouldn't be the first place I'd want to play if I was a quarterback. There's Dallas, meddling owner. And there's New Orleans. They were $100 million over the cap. Seattle really works for Russell Wilson. And part of the reason it works for Russell Wilson is because they've never been great before Russell Wilson. And so there's great value in the community for him. Everybody understands how valuable he is. The Packers won with Bart Starr, and they won with Favre. So there is a feeling in Green Bay as, hey, we can reboot this thing. You're not bigger than the team. Pittsburgh, they won with Bradshaw. They've won with Ben. And they can. The organization is stronger than the individual player. But what gives Russell Wilson power is that Seattle was never really anything until Russell. And so the franchise does need him. And he did take the franchise to a new level. And the franchise gets that. And I do think the power dynamic in Seattle is the right power dynamic. Is that Russell didn't make ridiculous demands. He's been hit more than any quarterback in the league for 5 years. He said, make the offensive line better. Seattle tends to be too run-centric in a pass-centric league. He said, let's throw the ball more. Let's get better receivers and a better tight end, a new offensive coordinator. So when Russell, this really is a good fit for him. Also, unlike the Steelers or, say, the Packers that are very much rearview mirror, embrace tradition, Pete Carroll doesn't. Pete Carroll's a perfect coach for Russell. He's kind of a big swing guy. He's an aspirational guy. He'll blow stuff up guy. He'll start over guy. He's moved through all sorts of coaches on the offensive side. Pete is not a rearview mirror guy. He's looking through the windshield. So this is a situation where Russell pushed back and Seattle smartly equipped him and modified some things to make him happy. That's a very sound power dynamic. What you're seeing in Green Bay is the quarterback resents having not enough power. And by the way, these quarterbacks really, they get owned by these teams. They can franchise tag you forever. So if, as a franchise, you've got to understand, there's going to be some built-in animosity if you don't give them some things they want. Unlike the NBA, where you can move around, or baseball, move around. You know, in football, you're trapped. Aaron Rodgers right now is trapped. That's why he's going to Jeopardy. He's his only out. Retire, make $15 million a year. Asking about Russian literature to contestants. So you have to understand that quarterbacks get uniquely trapped. They're really they're as important as anybody in American sports other than a dominant starting pitcher. If you can't hit him, you can't hit him. So Seattle, this relationship is actually really, really healthy. Doesn't mean it can't be uncomfortable. A great marriage can have arguments, but it's healthy. The star's got power, the GM's got power, the coach has some power, and Pete Carroll had to relinquish some of that power. That's a really healthy thing. There's no Russell Wilsons on the market. I like Kyler Murray. There's no Russells on the market. And with that, I bring in my friend George Carl, 27 years coaching, one of 9 coaches in the league's history with over 1,000 NBA wins. He is now joining us live. So, George, first of all, it's great to see you. You know, chemistry is an interesting thing that a coach can only do so much. Utah has very good chemistry. I get the same team. I get the same defense. I get the same effort every night. The Clippers, whose star is kind of a nonverbal guy, they're not very communicative late. Their chemistry is weird. I get a different team every half. How much of that's on the coach? I mean, they blame Doc Rivers for it, now Ty Lue. How much can a coach do to create chemistry, or is it up to the players?
I think it's a little bit of a 50-50 proposition. I think what I didn't like about the Clippers, and I still don't like about the Clippers, they've been this way the whole season. They've been up and down. They've been committed and non-committed. I don't even know what they did at the end of the season. It pissed everybody off. I mean, there's just too much negative energy going on in L.A. in my mind.
Yeah.
And negative energy, I think, in the playoffs is different. Is bad. It's not good.
Yeah. You know, it's when you – Donovan Mitchell's an interesting player. He's a combo guard. So – Now with Mike Conley out, he's got to be a little bit more of a distributor. But he's always been a scorer. He's like a little bit of a D Wade, where he's a natural scorer. He will defend you. There's a little combo thing going on here. Can you have long term? Can you win a championship with Donovan Mitchell, a scorer, kind of a scoring guard, being your lead guard and having to distribute too?
I'm kind of against that, but a lot of teams are trying to do it because LeBron is the point guard for the L.A. Lakers. He says he's a forward, but he's the point guard. I'm telling you, Donovan Mitchell is really, really good right now.
Yeah.
I think the two guys that are blowing up are Booker and Mitchell. Those two guys have made a big step in this playoffs to being a stud, an NBA all-star. I mean, not all-star, but NBA first team or second team player.
Yeah.
And I met Donovan Mitchell, I think his second year in the league. I spent some time in Utah with him. He's an amazing person. He really wants this. He really wants the challenge and responsibility of being a big time player, playing on the big stage and winning big games. And, you know, people forget he played great in the bubble.
Yeah.
He played great in the bubble. And he lost in the first round. So we all forget that. And the truth of the matter, he was dynamite in the bubble last year. And he's dynamite now. But I think what you're missing a little bit is Ingles is a point guard. Joe Ingles can distribute the ball about as well as any small forward in the NBA. And he knows the game, has great basketball IQ. And so I think it allows Donovan Mitchell to be okay. But the big thing that Utah has in its back pocket is Mike Conley is going to come back.
Yeah.
And Mike Conley's history in NBA playoffs is big time. He's been a primetime performer in the NBA playoffs in Memphis for many, many years.
Yeah.
So that's why I like Utah more than I like the Clippers.
You know, what it's interesting. You had, obviously, you had a lot of stars when you coached throughout the years. You had Carmelo Anthony, you had Rondo, you had Iverson, you had Gary Payton, a lot of stars. Most of those guys, but some of those guys are a little difficult personality-wise, DeMarcus Cousins. I mean, you did. You had your share of guys that were difficult. Now, Kawhi, George, is difficult in a different way. Load management physically, he and Pop didn't work. He's not a talker. You know, that's not who he is. Would you struggle coaching him, or how would you adapt to his personality?
I think you gotta try to push him in the right direction, but you also gotta realize he's who he is.
Yeah.
And trying to change him I've never been a guy that thinks you should change somebody unless he wants to change. And I think that's where I think Kawhi just bothers everybody, because when he plays the right way, when he is focused and he's demanding of himself, he might be the best player in basketball at both ends of the court. I mean, some of his games against Dallas were unbelievably efficient. I mean, shooting jump shots and shooting 60 and 70% is unheard of. and I mean, he's an amazing guy, but then he goes out in these last two games. He's been okay.
Yeah.
He hasn't been bad, but he hasn't been a superstar like he was in the last three or four games of the Dallas series.
Yeah. You know, I want to talk about Chris Paul, because you played some basketball yourself, and I said I would have given Chris Paul the MVP. I know he's not going to score 30 a game, but we haven't had a scoring champ win a title in this league in 20 years. Is that the truth of the matter is, in basketball, if I'm scoring 32, I'm taking shots and points and stats from you, and you can't have resentment. You need guys who are making others better. Chris Paul's a fascinating player. Literally everywhere he goes, everywhere. He's gotten terrible breaks. He was going to be a Laker. He got sent to Donald Sterling. He had to deal with Katrina first 2 years in the league. He got sent to the tanking OKC Thunder. The Suns were a mess when he got moved there. Can you compare him to anything? What about him do you love? And was there any player that you ever played against early in the 70s, 80s? Who do we compare Chris Paul to?
I think he's a more talented John Stockton. That's who I think he is. Other than, you know, John Stockton played in one place his whole career. This guy is the maestro of point guards in the NBA today. I just think he orchestrates the game. He manipulates the game at both ends of the court. He's not a great defender anymore, but he's a good defender. His mind still thinks defense.
Yeah.
And I think Phoenix right now has the best combination of young talent and old talent. I mean, Jay Crowder and Chris Paul and Torrey Craig, they have old guys that know how to win games. But the guys that are really blowing up are Ayton and Booker and a little bit Cameron Payne.
Yeah.
And then you got Mikal Bridges, who I didn't think he had a very good rookie year. And now he's playing like a stud.
Yeah.
I like Phoenix and Utah. And if they meet in the next round, I think Phoenix is going to win because of Chris Paul.
Yeah. Well, I don't disagree. I want to go to the East. Ben Simmons, it drives me nuts. I think he's an unbelievable talent, but he doesn't work on that jumper. And then you got Embiid, who's a super talent, but you've got the injury thing. if they get vanquished here by Atlanta and they don't win, they may break those guys up. Daryl Morey's been a very aggressive general manager. George, what do you do when you got Simmons who doesn't want to get better at what he weak? You got Embiid who's got an injury history. Even now he's got a meniscus tear. If Philadelphia gets beat by Atlanta, what do you do with those two?
Well, I mean, I think the biggest question I would ask you, you just got saying a scoring champion hasn't won the MVP for 20 years. We had a big guy win the MVP for the first time in 21 years this year in Jokic. And Embiid is a different type of player. I like Jokic, and I would never trade Jokic. But Embiid is he puts big numbers up. He's got to be given the ball a lot. He's got to be given a lot of attention to be successful. And I don't like that totally and completely in today's game. The fast game, the efficient game of playing fast, playing with the three ball, I think is actually more efficient than playing through Embiid.
Yeah.
Jokic is different because he's a playmaker. He's more of a passer than a scorer. But Embiid likes to put numbers up. And I'm not sure that's the most efficient game in the NBA today.
No, it's a really good point. George, it's a really, really good point. As a guy can be great, you know, I've said this for years, is that some players, the game moves into you. Like Russell Westbrook's a great talent, but the game became a three-ball shooting league, and he doesn't shoot the three. And so the game kind of moved away from Westbrook's style. And what you're saying with Embiid is you love him as a talent, but the math doesn't add up. I mean, let's talk Giannis for a second. Giannis is a great player. Coach, I can't have him on the free throw line late. He can't shoot outside of... I mean, what do you do with Giannis?
You teach him how to shoot. You make him learn how to shoot. Shooting is a learned effort. I mean, it's practice. It's going out and just doing it. I mean, I've coached a lot of guys that, you know, I mean, guys like Nate McMillan and Sam Perkins and guys... We made them into three-point shooters because you have to play. To play in the league today, you got to be able to make the three. And 33% is acceptable. We liked it to be closer to 40. But I just think Ben Simmons and Giannis got to know that you can't win a championship missing free throws. And you probably can't win a championship having a player out there that can't shoot the three.
Yeah. George Karl, 27 years. He's got a new podcast called Truth and Basketball with George Karl, a three-time cancer survivor. Known you a long time. I think your insight's great. It's great seeing you. You're going to get a bunch of 90-degree days in Denver now. Go golf. Go have fun. Good for you. It's great seeing you.
And we got NBA playoff basketball, and I love the small market teams. I love Utah. I love Phoenix. I think Milwaukee, I'm still rooting for him because I played there. I'm having a lot of fun right now, Colin. Thank you.
You bet. So am I. I think it's really, really fun. I said this the other day, is that people said, oh, the ratings will tank when LeBron leaves. And my argument is, well, are the stories good? I think the Utah story is great.
The stories are absolutely fabulous.
I think
right
the Brooklyn story is great. I think the Phoenix story is great. I think the Clippers drama is great. Years and years ago, the Mets and Yankees met in a World Series. Mm-hmm. And everybody thought, oh, Subway Series, big ratings. It was the lowest rated World Series at the time ever. People years ago thought the Jordan-Utah Jazz Series would struggle because Utah was a small market. The Lakers were running the league in big market Chicago. Still the highest rated NBA Finals ever. It's not about the market size, although that can help. It is about the story. LeBron's story is kind of this year, injured, not happy, in a bad mood, condensed schedule. The Clippers story is fantastic. The Phoenix story, the Brooklyn story. These are fans, give them credit. They know what's interesting. You don't have to always have the biggest brand. The Cubs were the losingest franchise in baseball. They got great ratings in the World Series because their story was fascinating. And I think the NBA right now is great. Good stuff. George Karl, thank him for stopping by.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
This weekend, the Westminster Dog Show is on Fox on Saturday. It's the Masters Agility Championship beginning at 5 Eastern, then Sunday at 7. It's the best in show. Catch it all on Fox and the Fox Sports app. And we've got this giant 3-foot-tall St. Bernard to get us ready for the event. The dog show has been going on, Colin, since 1877. So
really?
Be sure to check it out this weekend, live from New York on Fox.
You know, my dogs did not apply to be in this contest.
Neither did mine.
They're working dogs on the ranch. They're doing a lot of things on the acreage at home. By the way, are you ready to smell like a gentleman should? Yeah, cremocompany.com, body wash, shampoos, uncommon sense hair gel. That's cremocompany.com, C-R-E-M-O. Alex with the news.
No. Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Well, the Clippers are down 0-2 again after their Game 2 loss to the Jazz last night, and they were able to come back from that same deficit and win their first round series against Dallas, and Kawhi is confident his team has what it takes to do it again against the Jazz.
We all got to put our will out on the floor, see what we did in the first two games and try to limit our mistakes and just keep going from there pretty much. We'll see tomorrow what we got to do. And we got a lot of fight left. So we're up for the challenge.
Well, when Donovan Mitchell's playing as well as he's playing, Kawhi has to match it. Right now, Utah's got the chemistry and the best player in the series. So you got to have one of those two. Generally, the best player wins the series. Kawhi... Again, I think we all... Sometimes you just have to come to terms with what a player is. Kawhi is arguably the best player in the NBA in about 40% of the games he plays. And unlike LeBron, LeBron would go through a season and have two bad halves.
Mm-hmm.
You got a consistency with Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson. We have to come to terms with half the time Kawhi either doesn't play or doesn't take it to the next level. That's just who he is. But if you can get it 3 to 4 times in a series, you win those games, you're fine. But he has not been, in the first two games in this series, he's been suboptimal.
Oh, yeah. And as we were talking about, they have their work cut out for them. I hope they take at least one, hopefully two. I want to see a series. But you also have to remember, they're the only team playing in Staples who don't have a banner hanging up there. The Lakers, you got the Kings, you got the Sparks. Even at one point, Taylor Swift had a banner up in there. Everybody but the Clippers. That's got to be tough.
Yep.
Hope they get
it. It's their reality, yep.
Yep. All right, well, things got heated last night between Kevin Durant and PJ Tucker. They got into each other's faces and exchanged words in the third quarter. When Durant was fouled by Tucker, security ended up coming onto the court to help separate them. And according to Joe Verden of The Athletic, it was actually Durant's personal bodyguard, who is also on the Nets payroll, that broke them up. Now, I am here for spicy player reactions, but learning that it was KD's personal security guard kind of changes the narrative a little
there. He has no business being anywhere near the floor.
That doesn't look good.
That's incredibly
that good at all.
No, it's really bad judgment for a security guard. Like, what are you doing? Look at, he just made it worse.
He went in to protect his client. He went straight into security mode.
No, I mean, you got to throw him out of the arena.
Like, he has
can't
to be.
He can't be in the arena for the remaining games.
No, I mean.
Look at this reaction. Like, tough guy, security guy. It's under control. Like, they yell at each other, but it's under control. They're separated.
Yes.
He makes it worse.
Way worse.
By jamming into this thing and knocking PJ Tucker. What a goofball.
We're going to have Joe, who broke this story, on the show a little later. So, see if he has any other insight. If the security guard is still there, that's not good. That is not good.
At all.
Yeah. All right. Well, Zach Wilson will be thrown into the fire as the Jets start week one this season. Head coach Robert Saleh thinks that the rookie has looked good so far in OTAs, but says he still has a lot to learn.
You know what? We're still learning. I'd love to give you an answer on that one right now, Daryl. There's going to be so much more to learn, and your best learning comes through adversity and conflict. And obviously OTAs, everything's been feel good. It's been... everyone's excited about everything that's happening around the organization, but until we actually hit adversity, will we be able to learn more about each other and how we handle things? I'd shortchange you if I was able to give you an answer. No.
Yeah. Good luck.
Yeah.
They're the fourth best roster in that division, and he'll be the fourth best he'll have the fourth best offensive line in that division. That's a tough.
That's going to be tough love.
Yeah, and I actually think they have a really good. I think Joe Douglas is a really good GM. Their last two drafts have been functional and smart, and they've addressed real issues. But that is listen, you don't have to pay him anything for 4 years, so you can get free agents. But that is a tough draw for a rookie quarterback. Like we all know in the NFL, unless you're like Andrew Luck, where you land matters.
Yeah.
That's a tough landing spot. So I got Belichick twice a year, who eats young quarterbacks alive. I've got Sean McDermott, a defensive coach, who looks like one of the great young coaches. I now have Brian Flores, who, like Belichick, is winning with special teams and defense. They went 10-6. And I have Robert Saleh, who, even if he's solid, is probably the fourth best quarterback in that fourth best coach in that division. This kid, of all the quarterbacks drafted,
yeah,
he got the worst landing spot. We also have some dysfunction in ownership.
Mm-hmm.
You take the GM out right now, most of the organization you can have. That's why I felt like Darnold actually escaped
Jets.
He landed in a much better spot from a much more functional organization. We know landing spot matters. Trey Lance gets Kyle Shanahan, doesn't have to play week one.
Mm-mm.
You know, like, this is almost like what Joe Burrow got in Cincinnati.
Yeah.
And as good as Joe Burrow was, why did he get hurt? He didn't have the protection.
No.
This is very much a Joe Burrow situation.
Also, players are stronger. Players are faster. The game moves faster. You are a rookie quarterback. No rookie quarterback is going to be great right out of the gates. The only thing going for him is he 100% believes that he can do it. He has the belief. Yeah. So hopefully that can carry him.
Good stuff, Alex, with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Lie News.
We were saying this early. It's that in the NBA, you would think that NFL dynasties would be shorter because of the regulated level of violence it has, right? That you would have more guys hurt. And you would think dynasties in baseball wouldn't last long because it's the only sport where your star pitchers literally their arm goes out, right? But the NBA dynasties actually last really, I mean, even the Bulls dynasty, it was 2-3 year dynasties. And then MJ, you know, moved to baseball. Is that, we said this yesterday, basketball's very unique in that if I'm succeeding on the floor, you're losing something. If I'm scoring, you're not. In football, if I throw a touchdown, I get credit and you get credit for catching it, and we both hit a bonus. But in basketball, if I score 28, that means 28 points, shots you didn't take. And I think Brooklyn is built to be an 80s rock band. They're going to burn really hot briefly, and then Eagles will take over and they'll blow up. And Kyrie Irving last night, great player, even without James Harden, didn't hit any field goals the last 3-4 minutes of the game. Now, you got to give Milwaukee credit. They play defense. But Steve Nash talked about that, is that when you have three of the top 4 or 5 offensive skilled players in the league for the last 5 or 6 years, Harden, Kyrie, and KD. I mean, Kobe and Shaq were great finishers. They got tired of each other. So I think this burns hot. I think they can win the championship this year. But the minute they go into a little bit of a tailspin, like last night, Kyrie's not getting the shots to fall, and it doesn't feel the same way. Steve Nash talked about that.
You can always go back and look at a game and be like, we would have liked this player to shoot or whatever it may be. You know, but in the moment, I thought we still were able to create some good opportunities, very makeable opportunities. Now, you know, would I want Kevin or Kai shooting every single ball? Of course, but that's just not always the way it works out. But we can learn from it. We can grow. We got good looks at times that just didn't go in for us.
Yeah, they're going to be great. It's just the question is how long. And my guess is there's never been a team assembled that has 3 of the top 4 to 5 finishers in the game. In fact, when Kobe and Shaq were great, they were very unique because Pippen wasn't one of the great finishers. But Pippen was the greatest Robin ever. Is that Michael took the shot. Scotty knew it. Scotty played defense. Scotty slashed. Scotty scored on the break. Shaq and Kobe's problem was they were both arguably the 2 best finishers in the game, the best post finisher and the best perimeter finisher. And at times, who gets the last shot? Well, now you add 3. So when Harden comes back, and again, stuff works in the regular season, doesn't mean it's going to work in the postseason. That's when we watch the NBA. That's when legacies are formed. So the idea that 3 of the 4 best finishers in the league are going to work for years and years, it's not. But the key is, can you win a couple championships and then boom, you move on? I mean, even KD with Steph and Clay, after that thing burned hot and then it burned out. Joe Vardon breaking stories on the NBA, a couple of doozies out of Milwaukee, that's coming up.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Hey, I'm Doug Gottlieb. The podcast is called All Ball. We usually talk all basketball all the time, but it's more about the stories about what made these people love their sport and all the interesting interactions along the way. We talk to coaches. We talk to players. We tell you stories. You download it. You listen to it. I think you'll like it. Listen to All Ball with Doug Gottlieb on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Summer's here. Get active. Shed pounds with M-Drive Boost and Burn. Supplement makes you feel good. Free shipping, 60-day money-back guarantee, or go to mdriveformen.com. Joe Vardon's been covering the NBA for a while. He's a terrific writer, senior NBA writer for The Athletic. He's got some good stuff today. He's joining us now live. Now, Joe, ugly win last night. I said I felt it was a bad win. Where you're scoring 86 points, Harden's out, KD played terrible, Middleton's the best guy on the floor, and you drop 86. That's one of those games you really should have. I mean, the Nets had a terrible first quarter, and you kind of write about Mike Budenholzer, the coach. You know, I feel this watching. It's over. It's inevitable. He's out. You wrote about that after the game last night. Your thoughts for those who have not read that article.
Yeah, so Mike Budenholzer is the winningest coach in the NBA over the last 3 years, which means the Bucks are the best team in the regular season over the last 3 years. But they've obviously fallen short with Giannis in his prime, and now Giannis is signed to this extension, and there's going to be some accountability if they fall short again. So as we know, no one has come back from an 0-3 deficit in NBA history in any playoff series, and the Bucks were absolutely staring that in the face last night. They should have lost the game. They played great defense in the last 30 seconds, maybe a minute, to keep the ball out of KD's hands. You said he didn't shoot well. That's true. But he had a great fourth quarter, and we've all seen it. We saw what he did against the Cavs in 2017. We've seen Kyrie win games like that in the playoffs, and neither of them got shots, like real shots, in the final minute when they had a chance to win. So, you know, there was a stay of execution, if you will, for Bud. And, you know, now the series is 2-1. I mean, you win ugly once, but, you know, maybe you build momentum off that and go from there.
Yeah, I just don't see it. I thought they should have blown everything. All the ingredients were there for a resounding home win, and they basically had to hold them off. Now, you also broke the story and reported that KD's bodyguard, who is on the Nets payroll, is the guy that ran on the floor last night. So what's the fallout from that?
Well, right. The league is kicking the tires on this. There are some questions being asked, and I don't know if there's anything that comes of this. And the viewers need to know. Kevin Durant is not the only NBA All-Star who has a personal bodyguard on a team's payroll. I mean, LeBron has done that for years. All his guys are great. You know, Kyrie, he's another one, and you can just go down the list. I mean, Tobias Harris has a guy like that. So don't get caught up in that part of it. Now, like you said, I've been covering the league for a long time. It's true, and I've always, you know, I was covering the Cavs in Cleveland, so I've always been around these kinds of stars, and I have never seen what I saw last night in terms of a security guard getting out there and actually making contact with the opposing player like that, and then having that security guard turn out to be personally tied to the player he was defending. I've never seen that part of it. I don't know what's going to happen, if anything, but it was a remarkable scene for sure.
It's very interesting. When Kobe and Shaq and I was covering them were great. It was the only time I remember the two single best finishers in the league, the best perimeter finisher and the best basket perimeter, you know, interior finisher were on the same team. And eventually it didn't work. Brooklyn's got three of the four best finishers maybe in the game. Kyrie last night, you know, not getting the shots or looks maybe he wanted. And I think to myself, I've said today a couple times they're going to be a rock band of the 80s. They're going to burn really hot. It's not going to last long. Let's talk about the kind of the psychology when Harden comes back. And you've watched this Brooklyn team now. It's very interesting. I don't remember, Joe, in my life, three of the best four finishers maybe on the same team. I don't remember it.
As an aside, 2 years ago, my friends and I went to go see Def Leppard and Journey play at Ohio State, and Def Leppard melted our faces off. I'm just going to say that. It's a fascinating team. I think you might be onto something. That's why I think that Steve Nash, I gave him a vote, not number one, but he was on my ballot for Coach of the Year because I just think he's done a remarkable job holding this team together with these personalities. Kyrie, to me, is my favorite player in the NBA to watch with the ball in his hands. However, the last time he was in the playoffs was actually, what, I guess it would be 2019 when he was with the Celtics, which seems like an eternity ago. And that playoff run fell apart against the Bucks in that building, in this building right here, Fiserv Forum. And so last night, you know, he goes out and he wasn't very good. He was 9-22, I think, something like that. And I am watching this. Obviously, Brooklyn has way more firepower. But when he was the lead dog on the Celtics and he had a great game one, Bud figured something out, and Kyrie really struggled the rest of that series. And so I am wondering what happens with him in game four.
Yeah. By the way, you're doing a fascinating story for The Athletic. You're going to LeBron's old apartment and finding the people that live there after LeBron, which I love these sort of stories, but it pivots me into LeBron. He's going to be good last year or next year. But, you know, it was really funny, Joe. He came into this year in a bad attitude. He didn't get his 120 days off. He got 70.
No.
He didn't want to start when they start. He didn't want the All-Star game. He was in a bad mood all year. So I do give LeBron a little bit of a pass. Then AD didn't come in shape. And so now he's got to play 37 minutes. What kind of LeBron do you think we get next year? Because you're from Akron, born in the same hospital as LeBron. You know LeBron. You know his mom. What do we get from him next year?
You know, those are great questions because he's going to be 37 years old, and the mileage is substantial. There's nothing he has left that he could possibly achieve in this league other than become the all-time leading scorer. So I guess that is an interesting carrot. You talk about, or he talked about, having a full offseason of recovery. That worked wonders for him in the 2019-20 season, obviously interrupted by a bubble. But I was concerned about him even before the ankle injury with the playoffs, and here's why. In the bubble, he had to make one airplane flight, and that was from L.A. to Orlando for the start of the bubble. The rest of the time, he had no travel. So that's no demand on his body going flying to all these cities for all these really high-pressure games. And then in just the series alone, like, yes, he was recovering from an ankle injury, but he looked tired and he looked slower than we had ever seen him.
Yes.
So, listen, and I wrote this last week, like, you know, LeBron has haters. No one's going to feel bad for him. I get it. But let's just agree on something. At this stage in his career, and specifically with Anthony Davis on hand, he was not supposed to be in this position. He was not supposed to be the guy who was being counted on to carry an entire franchise. He was supposed to be, at this point, maybe the greatest wingman of all time, right? Like the facilitator, you know, fill in on some off nights, and Anthony Davis was supposed to be the guy, and they won together with a different formula, but it was supposed to transition that way. And it just didn't happen because Anthony, you know, he just never could be healthy. So, you know, I think for LeBron to have a great season, the kind of season that he enjoyed in 19 and in the 2019-2020 campaign when he led the league in assists, it really does start with Anthony Davis. He's got to find a way to be healthier. And I think if he is, I think that unlocks LeBron and we get maybe one more just really great year in the sun with him.
That's what I feel too. He is going to have a long off season. He doesn't get those. So I'm with you. I think he has a great season, but I never even thought of all the airplane stuff. That's why you're smart, Joe. Joe Vardon, senior NBA writer, The Athletic. He does terrific work. I cannot wait for the LeBron apartment store. Apartment story. I think it's going to be, and that's very entrepreneurial of you and very smart, and it's very unique, Joe. I've been reading you for a long time. Great work, and thank you for stopping by our show.
Oh, thanks for having me. It was great.
By the way, I want to go to a Def Leppard concert now. I want to go. I'm going to go home and listen to Def Leppard and Bon Jovi today. Why not? Yeah, I Bon Jovi still, when they tour, is like the leading one or two tour bands in America.
Oh, I love live music. Like, put me in any concert, I'm going to be dancing my face off.
You're still running your business on QuickBooks. How about QuickSand? Bigger you get, the faster you sync. Not with NetSuite. NetSuite by Oracle. One-of-a-kind financing program. Go to netsuite.com/herd, H-E-R-D. Have control and visibility over your HR, your e-commerce, your inventory, all that stuff. All right, Jason McIntyre, next hour, more on the Nets. It is a Friday. It is flying by. Alex and I come back in a few minutes live in L.A. It's the Herd.